the little ones, the three of us, we had a bouquet of roses, you know. We were the first ones, but they had a young man leading us, you know. But we took the street, you know, it was not sidewalk, you know. We took the middle of the street and went. And then the bride and the groom followed us, you know, they all had to walk to church. And then the relatives, you know. And of course the people were all lined up to watch the whole business, you know. And the brass band took us to church. Mm. They prayed all in the church. And when we come out and after the wedding was, when the marriage, the brass band took us back to the home. And of course they had put up an extra place for dancing on his yard. And so, and of course they served the family style, you know, in the wedding. I know they had, they always started out with soup, you know. And I said, when I think of it, when I cooked so much in the hospitals, you know, how terrible must have been to get ready all that food for those people. But they did. But they had those big ovens and they shove it in there and bake it, you know. It was good. And so, and then at the end, we had jello too, but it was made with wine.
Hmm.
They started, they didn't put fruit in the jello, they just dished it out nice in those glasses, you know, nice and red, you know. They dished it out that way, but never added fruit into the jello. But it was put up with wine. So, but they had, otherwise they had nuts and candy and kuchen and potatoes and meat, and always had coleslaw, cabbage salad, because that was the one that could take over. They had tubs full of coleslaw made up. That was easy to keep, you know, overnight. Because they had no refrigeration system whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course the table was lit. All the bottles of wine they had, everybody could pour it in there.
Now when they had a wedding, was everybody invited in the village?
No, just the relatives.
Just the relatives?
Just relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Relatives and I suppose some friends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know this particular Teresa was married, you know. She got married to a wealthy fella. He was the only child, but he was from a different village. And they had a big wedding and it lasted so long for 3 days. But I could only go one day because I had to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are not wandered around the next day. All they do is sit there and talk and eat and drink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about Easter? What was Easter like?
Oh, Easter, they were supposed to fast, you know, in Easter time. But the Germans in Russia were excused. Pope Pius the Ninth gave them permission when they moved in there on account of the country being so severe, you know, not where we lived, but the whole other place. They didn't fast, but they could eat 3 times a day, any time. But they couldn't have no meat. All during Lent, no meat.
Oh, during the whole time?
Yeah. And of course they had fish and herring, a lot of herring were used, eggs and cheese. But the real Russians, they couldn't eat that. You know, the real Russians, they couldn't have eggs. They had a different land, you know. They couldn't have eggs or cheese or anything. I don't know what they lived on. Now Catherine the Great said they had mushrooms and pickles. What? There's no food value in mushrooms and dill pickles, what have you got? But he said they got very lean during Lent, the real Russians. But the Germans were different. But 2 years before we left Russia, it was put out, the Pope said, that we can have meet on Sundays during Lent. So that was the last. When we came to this country, we didn't know. We just ate meat all the time, you know. And then they said, well, you people told us you're supposed to fast, but we didn't do that. In fact, when I came to the convent, and here you're supposed to fast, started 21 fasting, you know. And I thought, well, I didn't know how to fast, you know, because we always ate just everything, but I learned how to do it. But that we were excused that because of kind of the climate, but not the climate wasn't that bad where we lived, because we were more eastern part, not towards Moscow and Siberia, you know.
Mm-hmm. The Easter then, as a child, do you remember like getting Easter eggs?
Oh, that was a great feast again. The people just colored eggs and eggs, you know. And then children who were baptized, they had a baptism, baptized, and they had a man and a wife take them to church, you know. What did they call them? I mean, they are godfather, godmother, yeah. Every child had went to his godfather, godmother on Easter time. And of course they'd have eggs and candy, and they call it a vick, you know, a bought piece of bread, or buska.
What was that?
Buska. It's a real, that high, you know, you had some. Mm-hmm. And it was made out of eggs, and it looks real yellow. And they put it, they baked it in pear, in a round pear, then cut it down that way. So you got a big a hunk of that, you know, and eggs and candy for Easter. And so every child went to his godmother and godfather to get something. So that, and then, see, since the bells didn't ring in Easter time, on those last days, so the youngsters, you know, from school, they had kind of a thing that made a noise, you know, they go through the villages, and the first call for church, and then they'd ring and they holler, you know, that first call for church instead of others going to church, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they go around it on Saturday before Easter to collect the gifts from the people. They had a great big basket, and then people give them Easter eggs, colored ones. And then they divide them up in the end. So that was the pay for those 3 days for calling the people to church. Oh. Otherwise, they always rang the bells, you know, but for that time, it was nothing. They had to be called, you know.
So they would have these, some young boys would go around the village.
Yeah.
And knock on the doors?
Yeah, yeah, they did that too. The bigger ones, you know, they would come. And then, my mother would recognize some of them. I didn't know some of those kids, but they always gave them something. And also on New Year's Day, they went around and wished them happy New Year. And they'd give them a drink, you know, mm-hmm. something to eat. Next, they'd move down from place to place. Mm-hmm. Russians on the 6th of January, the Russians would come from the next village. And they had, and there was one dressed up like a bishop, you know, and they were all dressed up. And they go from place to place to bless the barns and the houses mm-hmm. of the German people. But they never gave them anything, but they just come through. And I thought they were dressed up like investments, you know. I don't know why they came to the German village to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of the of later years, when I was bigger, some ladies came from the Russians to wish a happy new year, and they'd spray some corn, you know, just in their house. So, and I was alone with children at home, whom the others were all in church. And all at once, they didn't rap, you know, they just walk in, you know. So here I was. Well, I knew there was, but folks always gave money when somebody is coming, wishing a happy new year. But I didn't have any money. So there was a big blood sausage lying there on the board of the cabin. And so I didn't know what it was. So I took that sausage and gave it to those two ladies, you know. And when my mother, when they came home, and they saw that corn in front, I says, yep, two Russian ladies came in. I didn't know what to give them. I gave them that sausage, and they had the biggest laugh, you know. Mm-hmm. But they were happy. They went off with that blood sausage. But they'd come and wish the Germans say a happy new year, mm-hmm. some of those Russian people. Because mm-hmm. we had some hired men from that village too. And one of them we brought along over to this country.
Oh.
He was the foreman of the people, of our. So we brought him along. We brought a couple young people along, men that got away from serving. So they ran off and kind of serving the army. And we got two girls, brought them along. But when we came to this country, there was nothing to do. So my mother had, we did our own work, and so they hired out, you know. And it didn't take very long, about 3-4 months, they got married already, the girls. But this one young man from that village, he died during the flu in 18. Got the flu and he died, and he worked so hard he was going to have his parents and his brother come over to this country, but then mm-hmm. he just died.
Now when they do this baking, and in the winter months, like we talked about, like it was January and so forth, what did they use for coal, or did they have coal, or what did they use to burn?
No, they had chips, you know they they had the manure and lots of straw in, and they mixed it up in like a threshing floor, and they had it about that thick. They had the horses run over with a big stone, you know, to make it even and pack. And then a couple of days they would cut it in pieces like this, instead of two of them stands up like this to dry, and finally they make bigger, they took them apart and made bigger stacks, and then they piled them up in a straw stack, this, and they used that for fuel,
mm-hmm.
and straw, a lot of straw, because whenever we hired some people, they'd ask my dad for that much money. The daughter was working for a year. She got $85, this girl. And her dad wanted that many loads of straw. So they had to pick up straw and take it to her dad. Whatever I suppose they use it for fuel too.
Mm-hmm.
Because the area where we were around, there was not much, too many trees, no lumber, all stone. It was slow, you know. You could buy coal in Odessa if you wanted to, but to bring it way out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why how those villages got along, you know.
But did they go out and gather all these chips out from the fields?
No. You know, they had the cattle always in the barns.
Oh, so they'd have the manure from there?
Oh, yeah. They cleaned it every day, it was cleaned out, you know, and so they had a big stack then they spread it and they, with a lot of straw in, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to do that kind of work?
No. I never did anything.
What were your chores?
I had nothing. I still was playing with my dolls.
Did your mother do a lot of sewing?
She did some. But when we came to this country, she hired some Jew, a tailor with his two daughters. And they came in the house and they sewed for days on end. We had a Singer sewing machine, but they brought one along too. They sewed clothes for us youngsters. And my dad said, don't buy so much clothes because they have a different style over there. And my mother insisted on have all new stuff.
Before you had left?
Yeah, before we left, so we had so much clothes. And my dad had suits made. They always had suits made by the tailors. And usually Jews were making up those. They bought the material, took it there, and they made them up, charged.
So what was it like in the home relating to religion? Did you have a lot of prayers in the home when you were growing up?
Well, not too much. I went to school every day, but we didn't have, once in a while, we said the rosary. And especially during Lent, everybody said the rosary during Lent. And of course, we had the priest come to school for religion class, the priest from the village there. And so, of course, and he also offered books for us to read. He had all kinds of those magazines for missionaries and so on. And he'd ask me, anybody wants to come, and we had to come in to his house, to the rectory, and get the books and write down what we took and so on. So, and of course, it was all German too, you know.
When it was announced that you, in the family, that you were going to come to America, what was your reaction?
Oh, I was so happy to go. I wanted to see all that, you know. I was very happy to go. But our priest told me, he said, he was put out about it, that my dad would leave the country. And he told me, does your dad think that the roasted doves are going to fly right into his house, you know? He was so put out about it. He didn't want us to go. And my mother was terribly upset. She didn't want to go. So my dad said, he purchased a farm when he was here the year before. He said, I heard enough that we're going to have war. And I says, we're going to go, when the storm is over, we come back. He bought a farm in Belfield, 5 miles north of Belfield. It was only 160 acres, you know. So that's where we went. We came, there was a huge barn there, and a pump where you get the water, and a house. Not a tree, just like everything, like a prairie, you know.
Did it look a lot like the Ukraine?
Oh, it was worse. We had trees, we had all kinds of things, you know. You didn't see anything like that. Oh, I was scared, you know, I was scared stiff. And then I was supposed to cook, well, I never cooked, you know. And my folks would go away to visit their friends, you know. And she said that the house would burn down. I was frightened to death to have a wooden building, you know. We never saw those buildings like that. And I'd make a fire and the stove and run out and see if the place is burning up.
Now let's go back to München. When you prepared to leave, what did they do with all of the items in the house? They couldn't take everything along.
No, they sold all the items what we had, all the equipment what Dad had, and the house. They did not sell the land nor the vineyards. Because my dad said, it'd probably be a year or two until they get settled, you know. See, The Russians, they wanted to overthrow the government at that time already. And so if it wouldn't been for the First World War, see, they were not ready. Then they had to stop and go to war. And so they didn't go through it until 1920, or 18 or 20, you know, around there. But my dad said, they are not prepared for war, the Russians, and they have no training whatsoever. He said, and they feed their people so badly, it was terrible in those camps, you know. He said, most of the time they had nothing but horse meat. Very poor. And he said, they took all the people in the real Russians and Cossacks and all these other nationalities, you know. And of course, he said, out in the camp, they had two places. They impressed them, their coats and everything. They just threw everything on a pile and set fire on them. And they took them in and shaved their heads and cleaned them up before they ever let them into the camp, because of they had so many lice all the time. Mm-hmm. So it was awful. That's why my dad wanted to get out before if another war comes.
Now, when you left the village, that was in 1913?
13. It was in May. No, in the end of April, I think. Because we were about 3 weeks on the road. Because we had to wait. We had to wait in Hamburg for 3 days before they were still loading on the ship, you know. And then we had, I think, 10 or 11 days on the sea. We had a terrible storm for 1 day. A terrible storm. We were all, they wouldn't let us come out on deck or anything.
You remember the name of the ship?
America.
The ship was called America.
America. And it was a new ship, and it was the largest on the at that time, in 1914. It was the largest ship to sail to across, you know.
Now, you left München and went all the way to Germany. Did you go by train, or how did you get there?
By train. We left München, and then we took a train about 40 miles away, and we went to Russia, then to Poland. I still remember Warsaw when we went through there. Because we had to cross the whole town on it was like a little buggy, you know. It was all made up in velvet, red velvet, and you pile in just like a carriage, you know. And we had to cross the whole town to get the train for Germany. And there was a funeral. Some archbishop had died, and we had to sit there and wait until we could cross. But then when we got to Germany, and we had poor trains in Russia, just benches, alongside benches. Nothing comfortable, nothing. And Poland was like that too. But when we got into Germany, they had nice upholstered seats like here, and like the Americans did. And then the conductor, I still remember the conductor in Germany. Whenever we had to change trains, you know, he'd come in and say, "Donner wieder aussteigen."
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that we had to leave the train. Yeah. So but we had to get out and take another train. So it was waiting here and waiting there, you know.
So when you finally came to Hamburg, had to wait there, and then you left in the ship?
3 days, yeah.
3 days.
We could go out and to the park and listen to music and so.
Well, on this ship, were there a lot of German families coming to America from Russia?
No, they were. But maybe one family was there, and two little Jewish boys with big signs on where they want to go, what they're supposed to go. But this one German family, that one man had very much trouble with his mother, you know, on that trip. Mm-hmm. But it was crowded. We were, I don't know how many hundred people, hundreds of people on that ship, you know.
How many were in your family again that came over? Your mother and father?
Yeah, and six children.
Six children.
Mm-hmm. So that was a lot. Because my grandmother came along, and those girls that we brought along, they had kind of helped, you know, with the youngsters, but they were all sick on the boat. Mm. It was all right for the first 2 days. See, after we left Hamburg, we crossed the channel to England, and they from there out, you know, and they got awfully sick with that. Mm-hmm. In fact, couldn't, you should see the dining room, maybe a couple of people were there. Myself and my dad were the only ones from the whole family that could go.
To eat.
And we had snacks, you know, you could go up and eat any time. A guy buy some snacks. You know, I just lived on those herring. My dad, don't eat that, you're going to get sick. I never got sick. But every day I went up for those herring, and I had to eat them up there. Once I brought them to the room, and they said, get out of here, you see. With those herring, you know, they just couldn't take it. But the food was good on the ship, but you had to hang on. When it was so stormy, you had to hang on to your dish, otherwise you got it all in your lap. Mm-hmm. It just went like.
So then when you finally landed in New York?
We landed in New York, in this Ellis Island, you know. Mm-hmm. And so all the trunks, you know, the luggage was, every family, that was all unloaded, you know. Every family had to stand by their trunks, you know. And they had to check what you brought along. But, you know, my folks had trunks and trunks, because my mother took feather bits along and pillows and all that she wanted, and they rolled everything in. Well, they smuggled a lot of things in too. Put it in between it and they rolled it up, you know. But when those two guys came, or three of them, they said, "It was all yours, you know," he said to my we kids, you know. He said, "Yes." And he went like this. He didn't check on our trunk. But next one was two Jews. Uh-huh. And they had a trunk. And you know what they did? They sliced the pillow. It, all the feathers come out. And they got bottles of whiskey or whatever, the brandy, what they brought in. And they cried. Because they brought it over here for gifts, you know. And you know what they did? Just throw it out in the water, in the ocean, all the drinks. Mm-hmm. But we were just lucky because there were too many kids. You have enough kids to need, you need that many trunks.
What did you decide to take along from your things? Do you remember what you had, when you had to decide
clothes,
what I'm going to take along?
Clothes and some pictures we took along, but which glass was broken too, even if they had it all wrapped up, you know. Mm-hmm. Glass was broken. But we have gifts for the relatives here. Mm-hmm. They had from out there.
So how long were you in New York at Ellis Island then?
Oh, I think just about a day, not even that long. Then we were put into a big, we had to come from the big ship to a smaller ship to get to the Ellis Island, you know. And then from there they took us off and put us in a big building. And there we stayed. We stayed overnight. And of course they fed us. We had food there. They fed all the people. And then before we left for the train, they get each one a big box of bananas and apples and sandwiches. Each child got one. I don't know why they did that. But anyhow, we didn't know how to eat bananas. So we bite into it, we're no good. They're no good. So on the way up, I saw some people, a couple sitting there, and they peeled those bananas. I said, you're supposed to peel them, you know. And then they threw them all out, you know. And then we learned how to eat bananas, because we never saw those in Europe.
You never saw a banana before?
No. We had all kinds of fruit, but no bananas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we come. We stopped in we left New York, and we stopped in Chicago. We had to change trains there. And I never forgot, we got out of a train and we had to walk up stairs, and there was another train standing. When we came up there, they told us to go on such and such a train. So then from there on, we stayed on until Dickinson.
So you came directly to North Dakota then?
Yeah.
From Chicago?
Yeah, from Chicago. Right straight on to Dickinson. And when we got to Dickinson, well, there's some relatives were there meeting us, you know. Then we stayed with some relatives, you know, my uncle lived about 7 miles from town, and he had a big farm and a big house. And we stayed there for 10 days or so until we moved out to the Belfield, to the home.
And still until then, you only spoke the German language?
Yeah. And, you know, everybody did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another bad thing. They should have mixed up better in school. I mean, they should let the children learn the Russian and use it. And not just when they got to the army, they had to speak Russian and do all that. That was hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way it is. Because they didn't want to be so mixed up with the Russians, you see.
So you were 14 then, or you were 13 then, when you arrived at Dickinson and in Belfield?
See, I think we got there at the end of May, and I was 13 in March, you know.
So then, after you got to Dickinson, the family settled on this farm north of Belfield.
North of Belfield.
And they continued to farm.
Yeah, the farm was leased out to somebody, so we couldn't do anything there. No, we had no garden or nothing. But the mother got things from the relatives and the neighbors, you know, that give some vegetables and things. But we didn't know how to make a garden. I didn't know anything about a garden.
So it was a lot of new things for your mother and father.
Yeah.
Did your mother sometimes say, I wish I could go home again?
Oh, she cried all the time. But I thought, that's why my dad would take her and go out visiting, and the kids would be staying in her room.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so hard to sit there without nobody around, you know. So I often think how terrible it is to go to a country when you don't know the language. We couldn't understand English and nothing. So after about some months, we had every day they had to go to town to buy furniture, they had to buy everything, the folks. And then she forgot, she wanted the saw to cut the ham in half, you know. Well, there were some neighbors across the road, a little ways. She says, you go over and ask if they have a saw for this. But I said, I had a catalog for my cousins. You know. I says, it says saw in here, but I says, I don't know if that's the right word, if that's the way it's pronounced. So I took the scissor and cut out this saw, and I went, I went over to those neighbors, you know, and I told them what I want. And so those young men, they had two boys and they were home from college. And he said, that's a saw. Well, I thought to myself, now I knew it was correct to say that, a saw. And that's the way we started out in this country. It was hard. We didn't know the language. We didn't know people. I mean, some neighbors would come occasionally, you know, but it was really...
Loneliness was real hard.
Huh?
Being so lonely out on the farm like that.
Oh, it was awful. We didn't have... No, and then they had only mass every third week. They had mass out there. The priest came out here and said mass in the country, you know. Because we had nothing but a buggy and horses, you know, went to win this country.
Well, did you continue on to school then?
I went to school, and that year, you know, we started out school, and the rest of my brothers, you know, and we didn't know a thing. I didn't know a word. Here I sat in school, and I had a little lady teacher. Well, she gave me a book and says, I see a cat, and I see this and that. And I thought, that's so dumb. I said, I didn't know why, but I couldn't express myself with anything. And so the boys went up to arithmetic. And they stood there, and she stood there with the book, and they stood there. So I get out of my seat, you know, and I went up there, and I showed them how to do it, how to figure up those. And of course, she didn't correct me at all. I said, when I think of it, yet, I thought to myself, my goodness, that was an awful thing to do.
Uh-huh.
But I could go along with it. They were eighth graders, you know.
Was this a country school?
Country school.
And were there children that spoke English?
There were 16 youngsters there, and she had every grade, first to the eighth.
And they weren't all German students?
No, they were those Ukrainians. Some Ukrainians.
What, did they speak Ukrainian then?
Well, some of them did. My brothers, you know, these little kids, they picked up that language just like that. And before the year was up, we could talk English, you know. And we'd be talking as good as we could, you know, at home. And my mother didn't. She said, what in the world are we going to do the way they talk? We don't get in on anything.
Did your mother and father learn to speak English?
Not much. My dad especially.
Didn't learn to speak English?
No, he said, that's the worst language he ever heard, he said. but you know, it just, you know, he didn't associate with other people that speak the language. But my mother picked it up from the kids, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you went to the country school how many years then?
Oh, I only went 1 or 2 years, then I went on to Richardson. I started working there for Mr. Mugley.
You were how old then?
Oh, I think I was about 16.
16 when you left the home?
Yeah, and I was working there. I worked there for 3 years for that family. He was a banker, Norbert Mugley. I took care of him when he was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know him. He was a judge and a lawyer.
And so you were in Richardson?
Then I went to the convent.
When you were 19?
When I was 20. And I went to the convent. And of course the convent, we study all the time with something, but it's all church and religion and all this and that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to just work myself up. And then when I had to go to the hospital as a dietitian, I didn't have my credentials. I did work with the dietary department, but I came out here and I took over at this hospital here. I know Dr. Riddle and different ones, and La Rose was on yet.
Uh-huh.
And so in that time, we had 1920 or 1925, you know, we had no credentials, you know. We just had to work ourselves up. What the doctors had to give us books, and you just followed everything for the clinics, you know, for the diets, also diets of reduction diets and other diets, you know.
Now, when you were here in Bismarck, and of course you had joined with the sisters. Were you able to get home very often to Belfield, to the farm?
Only once in 5 years. And that was for 10 days, that was all figured out. And that is, if you people paid for it, then you got home. Uh-huh. If they don't, then you don't. Then you stayed there. And I know some of the nuns came from Germany to the convent. They never got back. Like Sister Filberta, she was a nurse here for more than 40 years. She never got back to Germany, never got to see anybody. Mm-hmm. But that was the custom at that time.
Did your folks come and visit you here in Bismarck?
No, they don't.
At that time,
they had a car, but they didn't. They had one of those ports where they got out. Mm-hmm. But they didn't come. So we just left that, you know. And then I see now the sisters are running all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe how change.
Times have changed, the new life. Yeah. When you recollect about, when you sit here at the beautiful setting here at Annunciation Prior, and you reflect back on your age of 10, 11, and 13, and as a child, and then as a young teenager in Russia, which is now the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And of course, as you know today, there is many of those people aren't there anymore, and you reflect on the village and so forth. What do you often think about? What are the fondest memories you have of that village life?
Well, I feel very happy that we got out of the same at that time. The suffering they had to go through, you know. And I wouldn't want anybody ever to go back there. I mean, it was wonderful to live there. But look at what's happening. You cannot tell from one year to another what's going to happen with that government, what they have. Like this bishop that was here from Russia. Well, his mother was from around there where I came from. But you know, they were ousted out and they landed in an entirely different area, not in Siberia. But I thought to myself, and they have such a hard time getting food.
Mm-hmm. Now did you, when you came to North Dakota and your parents and so forth, not all the German families came and left Russia. Did they all leave, or did you have correspondence back and forth with families?
We did. That uncle of my dad's, the younger one, my dad was the youngest of, but John, he was shot down by the Bolsheviks right then by his house, and my other uncle was sent to Siberia, Louis, and he had a son who was a doctor. They grabbed him and made him go along with the Bolsheviks, you know, take care of this. And we heard from him. He said, please, we should get him over here. He said, I'll do any kind of work, he said, to get out of here. But we couldn't. We couldn't get in contact anymore with anybody. And my uncle Louis was sent to Siberia, and then he got out in some bears, you know, but his next son was shot down because he couldn't find my uncle. And that's the way they killed the family. And then the youngest daughter of his, Rose was her name, she was a nurse. And they said she was in a hospital near Siberia there as a nurse. But that's all we heard.
So to this day, you never had any communications?
No. And now this uncle that was shot, that little girl, children were not born when we left, but she is living in Germany, and she is coming next spring to Canada. She has relatives up there, and this man told me that he's going to bring her down to see me, but because she wouldn't know me, and I didn't, because her brothers and sisters were all killed.
Did your father your parents, when they came to North Dakota, did they subscribe to any newspapers? Did they get any newspapers?
Yeah.
German newspapers?
Oh yeah, they had the Wanderer, you know. And they had another paper from Richardson. Richardson used to put out a paper, a German paper.
Uh-huh.
But they only had German they only invest that in German newspapers and stuff like that.
Did they recall the North Dakota Herald?
That's right, they had that too.
Uh-huh. What about the Dakota Free Presse?
I don't remember
that. Don't remember that title. Huh? Now, your mother, of course, raised these children a lot of the time alone in München, and then, of course, they were more together, the mother and father in the farmstead here in North Dakota.
Yeah.
But would you say that your mother had equal opportunity in making decisions in the home?
Oh, I think she was the boss in the house. I really think she... My dad gave her a lot.
So she was a pretty strong woman.
Yeah, she was. She was small, but she was very
determined.
Going determined to get things the way she wanted it, you know.
So their final years in living out here in Western North Dakota, did they end up having a pretty good life?
They had a good life, you know. They did. All the children grew up and they got married and left the home. And at the end, my mother sat all alone out on the farm. And so we brought her in and put her in the nursing home in Dickinson. Then she said, I should have done that a long time ago. But she didn't want to come.
Did she reminisce a lot about living in Russia?
No, she didn't hardly ever. I says, to this day, I'm sorry that I didn't ask her more about things, what went on, you know. But they just simply didn't talk about it.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I know my dad, surely. I know my dad suffered a lot when he came over here because he wasn't used to working like that.
Manual labor?
Yeah, manual labor. I mean, he had so my brothers tell me. Your pa didn't even know how to hitch up the horses in this country, you know, because it was different out there. I says, well, I didn't know that. But I know he tried to show me how to hoe potatoes, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I hoed in my foot. But he suffered. I know he suffered a lot. He was very quiet. He didn't say much. My mother would yak, 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 but he didn't say much. Once in a while, he'd pick up and go outside, you know.
Mm-hmm. Your mother was a very strong person, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, she was.
And when they came to North Dakota and so forth, were they very faithful with their religion as well?
They went to church, you know, and we prayed and they did everything, you know, but we did in Russia.